This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Finland formally joins the Western Military Alliance, NATO. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is set to appear in a New York court. And Israeli forces shoot and arrest a Palestinian youth following a stabbing attack.
Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Finland has officially joined the U.S.-led NATO despite Russia's concerns about Western military alliance's eastward expansion.
Well, with receipt of this instrument of accession, we can now declare that Finland is the 31st member of the North Atlantic Treaty.
Foreign Minister Pekka Haavisto handed over Finland's accession papers to the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, the formal keeper of NATO's funding treaty. Finnish President Sauli Niinistö hailed the start of a new era for his country following the event. The U.S. President Joe Biden has welcomed Finland while urging Turkey and Hungary to drop their objections for Sweden to join without delay. Meanwhile, Russia, which is against the NATO expansionist agenda, has warned of countermeasures. Moscow has vowed to strengthen its defenses and western and northwestern regions. Finland, alongside Sweden, applied to join the military alliance last year following Russia's military offensive in Ukraine. And Russia has intensified attacks in and around Bakhmut, a city that has become the focal point of Moscow's wide-ranging offensive in eastern Ukraine. Moscow says its forces have raised the Russian flag on an administrative building in the center of the city, even though Ukrainian soldiers still hold some western positions. But Ukraine's military has rejected Russian claims to have captured the city center. Since the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war, the battle for Bakhmut has been one of the bloodiest, with heavy casualties on both sides and the town largely destroyed. Meanwhile, Ukraine reported numerous drone attacks by Russia overnight, saying its air defense systems intercepted most of them. Turning to the United States now, where the former President Donald Trump is set to appear in court soon following a hush money indictment. The ex-president will turn himself amid tight security and street protests. He will formally face criminal charges. He will be fingerprinted and photographed. Trump will also have a chance to plead. The arraignment comes amid growing tensions and political divisions in a watershed moment ahead of next year's presidential election. The ex-president was indicted by a grand jury in New York after a years-long investigation into alleged hush money paid by Trump's personal lawyer to adult actress Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 presidential election. Trump has denied any wrongdoing and has called for protests against what he describes as political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history. Moving on, thousands of students have hit the streets of the U.S. city of Nashville to express their anger and demand actions following the recent deadly school shooting there. Local high school and college students walked out of classes and joined the protests. Demonstrators marched towards the Tennessee state capitol to the city to call for an end to gun violence and demand stronger gun laws. On March 27th, a shooting of Nashville's convent school left 6 people dead, 3 of them 9-year-old children. The assailant was a former student from the same school who was killed by police. The motive behind the shooting still remains unclear. A total of 90 school shootings have been reported in the U.S. so far this year, with last year's figure standing at an all-time high of 303. And the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has hailed a stabbing attack against the Israeli forces near Tel Aviv. Hamas says the knife attack was in response to the regime's crimes and its storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque in Al-Quds. We talked to our correspondent, Mona Kendall, to get more details.
Almost 1 hour ago, Israeli military declared that 2 Israeli soldiers were stabbed south Tel Aviv near a military base there, claiming one of them is in serious condition, claiming that a Palestinian man stabbed them, and Israeli settlers there opened fire at this Palestinian man, and the Israeli military has arrested him. He was wounded and arrested under the claim that he stabbed Israeli soldiers. At the moment, the Israeli military say that they are searching, and they rule out the possibility that another, Palestinian fled the scene earlier. They thought that 2 Palestinians had been in the area and that they tried to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. One was shot and wounded and arrested, and another one had fled the scene. Now the Israeli military are saying that only 1 Palestinian was in the area. This operation led to the injury of 2 Israeli soldiers. We have to mention that since the beginning of this year, almost 100 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, including at least 17 children and 1 Palestinian woman.
And the UK has been gripped by a wave of strikes by workers across the public sector in recent months. They are demanding pay rises amid a cost of living crisis in the country. Earlier, we discussed this in our news review program. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, more strikes in Britain. And this time, the UK passport office workers have launched a 5-week walkout as the country reels from an unprecedented cost of living crisis. The Public and Commercial Services says that more than 1,000 members are going to participate in this strike. The union has accused the British government of failing to hold any meaningful talks with public sector workers. The union wants talks about pay, jobs, pensions, and also working conditions. Meanwhile, British teachers have also overwhelmingly voted to take 2 further days of strike action on April 27th and May the 2nd. The UK has seen a wave of strikes across various public sectors in recent months, with workers demanding inflation-matching pay rises and, well, the country. And the inflation, actually, in the country has hit a 40-year high of more than 11% in October. And to discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent Robert Carter, live from London, and also Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics, joining us live from London. Also, let's begin with our very own Robert Carter, our correspondent. Could you please give us some updates, Robert, on the situation? Of course, we do know that these strikes are ongoing, but are there any plans? Does Rishi Sunak have any plans to alleviate these economic woes?
Well, that is the issue that the government has faced for quite some time now. These are not the first types of strikes that we've seen to hit the UK in recent months. Of course, going back to the Christmas period in December, there was a wide range of strike action during that month, including areas that were affected, such as travel and also the postal services. And now we're seeing it expanding into the education sector. Parts of the NHS have also been dealing with strike action or negotiations over their pay and so on. And so things are just getting worse. They're not getting better at all. And the government has been finding itself basically incapable of resolving many of these disputes. Now, of course, each union has its own dispute areas where it's trying to fight for better working conditions or an increase of pay for its members. But the government's bottom line is that they just ultimately don't have the money to give in to all of the demands. And so far, I think every union that's been looking at the government's handling of this crisis has seen that they're failing time and again, and there's been endless strike action. So I think the pressure is definitely on the government. Union bosses know this, and so they're pushing high demands to the best of their ability, and they ultimately want to keep striking to keep the government on the back foot to hopefully try and get a better deal in the end. But the Conservatives are known historically for taking a hardline position on industrial action, and it's quite likely that with the ongoing war in Ukraine, for example, that the UK government will continue not to go easy on union demands, because the way they are painting the picture is that the money that they have needs to be spent elsewhere, such as supporting the Ukrainians against the Russians. People here in the UK are expected to put up and like it or lump it, basically.
Exactly, Robert. You just answered my question partly, because looking from outside, it would be quite irrational to spend money on a war between two other countries while the people inside the country are suffering from economic hardship. So, Mr. Shakespeare, in your opinion, do you believe that the UK government has the will to alleviate these economic woes the people are facing, or will they once again choose Ukraine and the path that most likely the US will be trying to lead them to?
Well, let's start with a solid fact, an English breakfast or a British breakfast. And the annual rise in the British breakfast is now 22%. That's an egg, bacon, sausage, black pudding, tomato, baked beans, toast, marmalade, cup of tea. And that is the reality of the inflation rise. And those who have mortgages are in debt in some way, they're being hit even more. If you then look at what the claims are, they're very reasonable. The teachers are being offered 5% plus a one-off thousand, yes, but being offered 5%. And they're actually asking for 12%. But they are saying that in real terms, their salaries have gone backwards 24% since 2010. Now, however you look at that, that is a massive decrease in standard of living, and it's been going on long before the start of this war, which is only in fact exacerbating the situation.
So, Mr. Shakespeare, do you believe that Rishi Sunak has any plans or even has the will to solve the problems?
Well, I don't think the government, they are just relying on being able to smash everybody down. But I don't think they're going to be able to do that, because you see, it's not just the UK, it's country after country after country now. And they're all experiencing inflation roughly on the lines that I was indicating and that Robert was indicating. And so I think we're going into what is going to be a very hot summer indeed, with, of course, political consequences. You can't have inflation like this without there being major consequences for governments.
Exactly. We're expecting major consequences. So, Robert, as someone who's right there on the ground reporting for us, and we've seen strikes unprecedented in the UK. Just for example, let's take the nurses over the past century. This is the first time that they've come out on the streets. So, What do you expect to happen next, considering the fact that it doesn't seem that the government, based on what both of you agree on, has any particular plan to alleviate the economic woes of the people?
I have to say that the situation is going to get worse. There's no doubt about it. The fact of the matter is that the government's position is that they can only pay so much because the coffers are essentially empty. And, you know, they pin the blame mostly on having to deal with the COVID crisis previously and, you know, the negative consequences of Brexit, perhaps, depending on who you ask. But there seems to be a real lack of willingness to discuss the situation in Ukraine.
Thank you very much, Robert Carter, our correspondent, joining us live from London. Also, Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics, joining us live also from London. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us on this edition of the News Review. And China says the United States strengthening its military deployment in the Philippines will only lead to more tensions in the region.
The United States, out of its own selfish interests and with a zero-sum mindset, has continued to strengthen its military deployment in the region, the result of which is bound to increase tensions and jeopardize regional peace and stability. Regional countries should think deeply about what is appropriate and what is mutually beneficial, so as to make choices that are truly conducive to their own interests and to regional peace and stability.
The spokeswoman's comments came after Washington's new deal with the Philippines that has envisaged four additional bases for U.S. troops. They include one near the disputed South China Sea and another not far from Taiwan. The 2014 Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement between the two countries, known as the EDCA, gave U.S. forces access to five bases in the Philippines. It was later expanded to nine, with a location of the new ones announced on Monday by Manila and confirmed by Washington. The deal is made amid growing tensions between the U.S. and China over Taiwan. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Insight. Welcome to Insight. On this episode, we will be discussing the new global economic order with Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic Affairs, Dr. Mehdi Safari. But first, this brief analysis.
A new global economic order is rapidly taking shape, centered in Asia, which is replacing the United States and Western-centric economic order based on the British Empire and US hegemony following World War II. This process is reviving ancient trade routes from east to west and from north to south, with Iran at the center of these new-old trade routes. Iran itself has experienced massive technological growth in the past decades, joining the ranks of technologically advanced nations and itself becoming a major force in global affairs, in addition to the vast natural resources it possesses, which had made it an energy superpower before. God only knows what massive amounts of treasure and natural resources still remain undiscovered, sleeping under the ancient mountains, deserts, and seas of Iran. Iran achieved this incredible feat of technological advancement while being under the severest economic sanctions in modern history. This unprecedented achievement is rooted in the experiences of the 8-year imposed war in the 1980s, which taught Iranians that they are capable of overcoming any challenge they are faced with. And it's one of the best examples of blowback in modern history, where a war which was started by the United States and the West to crush revolutionary Iran became the source of national reawakening of this ancient pillar of human civilization. Almost a century of Western brainwashing have made it difficult for some to believe that Iran can thrive without somehow being connected to the West. But the rapid developments on the ground are showing that the world, and with it Iran, are entering a new, post-Western dominated global order. And maybe the first steps taken towards this new world order were taken 45 years ago by those brave Iranian revolutionaries led by Imam Khomeini, and those courageous soldiers of the sacred defense, like martyr Qasem Soleimani, who dared to dream about a new world order without the United States and Western dominance, when nobody else in the world believed this to be possible.
Dr. Safari, thank you so much for joining us on Insight. You are the economic deputy of the foreign ministry. You have a very long history and experience in the economic field. For many decades, you were the Iranian ambassador in Russia, in China, in Austria. Maybe the ideal person to talk to about a new economic order that's taking shape in the world. It's interesting. We had this report recently that because of the sanctions on Russia, the gas turbine that the Russians were using from Siemens, from Germany, are now being replaced by Iranian.
Siemens thought we have taken their turbines, but no, we are self-sufficient in turbine manufacturing, from welding to other parts.
So it's not Photoshop?
No.
we're doing it.
Yes, we're doing this even in the aviation industry. I gave the example of a tractor. Today, our machines are being exported to Latin America. We have started exporting to Africa. Our medical equipment, our nano equipment, they are being exported. We now have tools, the same surgical robots I mentioned, remote surgical robots that we gave to Indonesia and trained its people. Today, our rival in this is America.
You're talking about the surgical robot?
Yes.
Yes, I'm talking about robotic surgery of the brain through the nose. Hospitals rent this device and do not perform open brain surgery. The device is Iranian. It has been very successful, and therefore we have high abilities in this regard. In addition to this development, the knowledge-based countries sanctioned us and did not provide us with parts in the areas that we had weaknesses. But the youth of this country succeeded in manufacturing those parts by establishing small companies while they received some support from the government. Of course, we expect this support to be more as we had a lot of growth in various dimensions. In the oil and gas sector, we produce oil well components, upstream parts, and downstream parts. I don't claim that we can produce 100% of the components, but over 80% of the parts are manufactured domestically. It holds true about petrochemicals, too. Therefore, with this geography and these technologies, we have managed to focus our exports, industry, and economy on knowledge-based projects and export goods. Let me give you an example. We wanted to build a factory inside the country, but the foreign party was not able to take over the project due to the sanctions. We drew up the blueprints and built it ourselves, and it became a reference for all similar projects. I skip other examples in other fields. So we can reach this level in all areas if we have growth like this. Second, our focus should be on transit. Transit is an industry in itself. It is a foundation that reduces your reliance on oil. Third, energy swap. Whether electricity, gas, or oil, this is a foundation that has nothing to do with oil and is a source of income. Within the aforementioned Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we need to try to connect the transit sector to the energy and electric power sectors at the same time. And in different seasons, when the consumption rate fluctuates, this exchange can create savings in the field of infrastructure power plant construction, which costs a lot for the country. Of course, renewable energies and solar systems are available, but this should be done. We have short-term plans and long-term plans, and I think this is achievable under short-term plans, and for the long-term plans, we can think of greater capacities.
Doctor, you mentioned very interesting points now. One part of it was about the fact that you talked about that the Americans are basically just printing money, that their economy is no longer that production-based, industry-based that it was maybe in the past, and that this is now shifting to Asia, especially China. But the other thing you were talking about is that you said that this going towards new frontiers for Iran was something that you had been talking about in the years, you know, previous to the events that we're witnessing today. Today, it's very easy for everybody to see that, you know, America, there's a certain decline, that, you know, China has risen, Iran has increased its own capabilities and power and technological know-how. But it seems to me we had this, let's call it cultural problem, historic problem in Iran. Because our elites from before the revolution and over the last 100 years were so focused on the West, it was very hard for some people in Iran, I'm talking, you know, elites after the revolution, those who are you know, part of the elites in Iran after the revolution, to really believe that it's possible to have a world where it's not West-centric, where Iran can play its own independent role with the other nations that are rising. If you could please, because you were in the middle of all this, you've been in politics for decades now, you've seen it with your own eyes, you've experienced it yourself, if you could please give us a little bit of your analysis of this transformation that's maybe occurring in terms of the thinking and the culture within Iranian elites.
This is a very good question. Look, most of our educated people have passed our higher education in Western countries. Today, we have our own master and PhD courses. But in the past, we used to go abroad to get a bachelor's degree. For example, I studied in America and got a master's degree and a doctorate degree there. We were trying to adapt our mentality to theirs, and we felt that everything was there. But during the war, which lasted for 8 years and was imposed immediately on a country that has just gone through revolution, things changed. When we refer to that as an imposed war, many people argue that it was not like that. But in fact, the Iraq-Iran war had practically been imposed on us. We had to fight for 8 years with empty hands. At that time, both the East and the West were against us because the Islamic Revolution was the only independent revolution that existed. At that time, you either had to depend on the West or the East for a coup to happen. Well, these two powers witnessed that a different revolution had taken place in Iran, and they panicked. Well, during the war, we did not have military equipment except for some Kalashnikovs or a few RPGs and a minor air force. We had no tanks. But this forced us to fulfill our own needs. I remember Saddam fired rockets at us, but we didn't have anything to counterattack. But thank God, with the help of the Iranian youth and the guidance of Imam Khomeini and the leader Ayatollah Khamenei, we moved towards independence and we came to the belief that we could do it ourselves. Let me tell you about a telecommunications project during the war. My field of study was telecommunications, so I was asked to conduct a project during the war. At that time, I was young and I was single. I spent 10 nights working on that project, and we produced and used the device independently, and the telecommunication issues were met successfully. We worked in these areas. For example, we started working on nanotechnology 4 years after the Americans had begun. Regarding biotechnology, I need to say that today we produce biomedicine today and provide 93% of the country's needs. Well, this is the result of the hard work of these young people. I mean, those needs encourage the youth of Iran to move. And with the guidance of our leaders, whether Imam Khomeini or Ayatollah Khamenei, we understood that we could, and this proved to the world that we could. I do not want to say that we are a military power, but in any case, we became self-sufficient in numerous areas and various industries. In the automobile industry, some complain about the Peugeot, but it merits a mention that its engine is completely Iranian today. Samand is also another Iranian sedan. In steel production, we used to have only one company in the past, but today, see how much steel we produce, and we have a high rank in the world in this field, both in ferrous and non-ferrous products. In the area of non-ferrous products, we have copper, aluminum, and so on. Regarding IT, today we have gained self-sufficiency in various platforms and devices, and we can compete with European countries. Why do they hire our youths and give them projects? Because they are capable.
Doctor, do you think it's a problem for some of the elites was that they didn't have information about these things, these realities? Because, you know, I remember a time when the leader of the revolution said, it's good if we show around some of the officials, some of the things yes. that exist. Is it a lack of information, or is it something deeper than information?
I think it is both. It is a lack of information, and at the same time, it pertains to mentality. You see, I once said that we are a small distance away from being a superpower. They criticized me, and I said, you need to take a couple of international courses to understand what superpower means. I said, with all due respect, you don't understand. If you say, I don't understand, you don't understand. If you say, I don't understand, you don't understand either. Because the textbooks you are taught with are written in such a way that make you a person who never imagines he can make his country a superpower, and they discourage you. This is why the day a decision is made to do something in this country, it happens, although everyone says it is impossible. We have this mentality in previous areas. Did you believe that we can achieve the surgical robots that the Americans used to operate on their soldiers? No. You know why? Because we lack information in the country, both operational information and knowledge information. But many of our problems have a cultural background because we studied in the West, and our mentality is towards that. They have always insinuated that we can't. They are capable, but we are not, and we don't have the ability. Yes, we do not claim that we are number one in these fields, but our rank is not that bad either. They ask why our economy is broken while ignoring the effects of economic pressures and sanctions. Allow me to say something about barter trades or avoiding the dollar. They ask, how do we barter trades? First of all, we will not tell you the details, but anyway, for example, when we see that a country needs a certain product, we offer them the product in exchange for the goods that we used to buy from them in the past. It is not called barter trade. We give the money, we sell the product, we keep the money there, and we buy our own goods. We make a balance to avoid the dollar. I mean, we do trades using the national currencies of the countries. They say it's the communist style and so on. But no, it is not. Now, suppose that a country needs potatoes or cars, for example. We have recently signed a contract to produce 45,000 cars for a country. Now, this country owns so many items and raw materials that we need. We deliver the cars for a certain price, and instead receive cotton, or for example, we get iron ore or something else. We almost always try to do this. Now, one of the important things we did was that, you see, I have said this many times in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we have 6 to 7 factors to bring currency into the country. Foreign exchange income is important to us. Well, the export is based on foreign currencies, but in the field of imports, firstly, we diversify our sources of imports, meaning that if we have to bring chemical fertilizer from a specific country, we will try to find 5 other sources. Secondly, about the same chemical fertilizer that we depend on, we try to produce it domestically with the help of our knowledge-based companies. Third, regarding medicine, for example, I will bring pharmaceutical materials, petrochemicals. This will work. Fourth, we have been very successful in exporting technical engineering services. We were faced with warranty problems. We solved them in different ways. This is much better than sitting in a corner and doing nothing and saying that nothing can be done until sanctions are resolved. We have found solutions to remove the obstacles. You may ask what score we got out of 20. I would say 16. I wouldn't say we got 20. However, we are trying to get there. Unfortunately, our mentality has become like this. I should also say that I have studied in America, but they might say that because I have been ambassador to Russia and China, I am favoring them. This is not true. We look at the benefits. It's a win-win situation. Let's consider transit cooperation with Russia and China as an example. What have we done in this area? Our route is prepared and the goods will be exported. What concessions have we given them? Tell me. We are using this transit route.
We even became partners in a port in Russia.
In Russia?
And also in the south, countries of Central Asia have come to us and asked for warehouse facilities there in the port of Bandar Abbas to deposit their cargo so that this route will act as a corridor.
But things that are very natural in other countries, which other countries have been doing for decades, for a long time, things that one would consider to be very normal trade and economic relations, when Iran does it, everybody starts complaining about it.
As you see in this administration, we launched a transit route which they said was haram. Interestingly, when other countries do this, it is halal, and they are encouraged. But when the Islamic Republic of Iran does it, they protest. China signed a 25-year agreement with the Persian Gulf countries. Everyone encouraged them and admired their economic intelligence. But when Iran did it, they quickly said, look, they sold out the country. As you see, this is a manipulated mentality. They have ideas in their minds and they want to prove it. Sometimes our analyses are based on our own wishes and hopes and not facts. Yes, they have power and they have facilities, but we also have them. We are not number one in technology, but we are trying to get there. The Minister of Science of an African country, which is also a rich country, came and visited our universities. Later, when I went to that country and visited their prime minister, he told me that his minister of science was giving him a hard time by constantly praising our abilities and technology so much. I said, well, he was telling the truth. But I don't understand why some don't see these things. When we travel to a foreign country and see a couple of streets, we quickly get surprised and excited at how advanced they are. But when it comes to our own country, we keep criticizing. So this view comes from the mentality of some Iranians.
Very, very nice, doctor. So we only have a few minutes left. We always try to look into the future at the end of the program. If you could, maybe 2-3 minutes, give us your vision of the future, give us an insight in how you see the next 10, 15, 20 years in terms of the economic order and the economic shape of the world and Iran's place in it.
As I told you, the main center of the global economy will be Asia, and I believe that we will become one of the main elements of this center. Regional organizations will gain strength, especially the Shanghai Cooperation Organization will develop immensely, and of course these conspiracies are always plotted against us, and we will finally overcome them by God's grace. They fabricate an excuse every day. I always said that after the recent riots in Iran, we will see a sharp rise in the price of the dollar, because these unrests have economic effects, and the games they play would leave its effect on the economy. I believe we can be successful in non-oil exports. I say that we should increase our industrial power based on knowledge-based projects and ease taxes so that we can benefit from the resulting exports. When our exports are higher than our imports, our money will be stable. And this can be done easily, without a doubt. To some extent, the work orientation of our country has always been based on imports. Our business trades have been imports, and our exports were limited to some special goods. This is changing, and I am sure that this balance will become positive soon. And then our money will become stable and valuable, and it'll be able to interact with the countries of the world. This way, we can make investments in foreign countries and inside Iran.
Doctor, we have completely run out of time. Thank you so much for spending time with us, explaining these very interesting matters, very in detail and with expertise. Thank you for joining us on Insight. So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Dr. Safadi? It seems this new economic world order that we always speak about in the future tense should be spoken about in the present tense. The speed with which the old economic order is collapsing and the new order is taking shape is breathtaking at times, as is Iran's technological advancements, which are a significant element in the development of this new order. Iran has all the necessary elements to become an economic superpower, given its vast natural resources, with news of new discoveries being reported on a regular basis, as well as Iran's rapid and massive technological advancements, achieved under the severest of sanctions, but acknowledged as stunning by both friend and foe. The center of human economic life is shifting back to Asia, where it has been for the vast majority of human history. And Iran's economy is upgrading to a knowledge-based economy, built on a strong foundation of vast energy and natural resources, allowing Iran to retake its historic place as one of the pillars of modern human civilization and the leading power of the most geostrategic region of the world, West Asia. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time, on Insight.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another special edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, we will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ya Mawlai, bi dhikrika 'asha qalbi. وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين ذنبي المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك، فإنما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
Dear listeners, we were discussing this part of the supplication of Abu Hamza Thumali. يا مولاي بذكرك عاش قلبي فبمناجاتك بررت ألم الخوف عني. Oh my master, in your remembrance my heart takes delight, and through prayers I hold communion with you, easing my pain of fear tormenting me. Regarding this, we said that the spirit of every shape and form of worshipping Almighty Allah is the remembrance of Him. It is the spirit of every form of worshipping. It is what we have been recommended to have in all our actions, all our states of minds during our lives. Now, the point is, what is the true meaning of this remembrance? Having a look at the different verses of the Holy Quran, we understand that we find our true rest in Allah's remembrance. But what is it? What is this kind of remembrance that Holy Quran says, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ, remember me and I will remember you. In interpreting this verse, some commentators of the Holy Quran have claimed that God wants to say, remember me by doing good deeds so I will remember you through my mercy and wholesome reward. This expresses a portion of the truth, but it is also possible that this verse points to a deeper and more profound subject. Those who have tasted the sweetness of love always like their beloved to pay attention to them. For example, in a gathering where they and their beloved are present, they wish their beloved glances at them sometimes. The true lover, the one who is truly a muhib, is absolutely delighted by this attention, and it is more valuable to him than all other things, than all other material enjoyments. God the Exalted has many such friends. As such, God says, if you want me to pay special attention to you, and so to speak, to take an occasional glance at you, then remember me. فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ.
شهر رمضان الذي أنزل فيه القرآن هدى للناس وبينات من الهدى والفرقان، فمن شهد منكم الشهر فليصم، ومن كان مريضا أو على سفر فعدة من أيام أخر، يريد الله بكم اليسر ولا يريد بكم العسر ولتكملوا العدة ولتكبروا الله على ما هداكم ولعلكم تشكرون.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
So, those who have somehow tasted the sweetness of love of the Almighty Allah, this divine love, do not forget God for even a moment. Even in sleep, they are heedful of the Almighty Allah. As they wake up, the first thing they utter is a remembrance of Allah. They utter a dhikr right after they wake up. Some ulama said that the effect of constant practice will show itself in a person reaching the stage where not only when he is alone he will remember Allah, but also at any given moment. In fact, while working for others, attending to daily affairs and interacting with the others, attention to God will persist in his heart. Possibly, this state of attention to God remains in his heart or becomes even stronger while he's in sleep. Perhaps it is for this reason that the deep sleep of a believer is said to be a form of worship, an ibadah. So, anyway, remembrance of God leads to His special attention towards His remembering servants who are truly in His dhikr, who are practicing His dhikr. During the latest parts of the life of Allama Tabatabai, he was often requested for advice. Such a request was repeated by many times, in which he would always recite the same noble verse, فَاذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ وَاشْكُرُوا لِي وَلَا تَكْفُرُوا. Remember me and I will remember you. So that's why we can now fully comprehend the importance and value of God's attention towards His servants when we realize that the great loss of the faithless people on the Day of Judgment will be God's inattention to them. In expressing the severity of the loss and chastisement of the faithless on the Day of Judgment, God says, لَا يُكَلِّمُهُمُ اللَّهُ وَلَا يَنْظُرُ إِلَيْهِمْ. Allah will not speak to them, nor will He so much as look at them. And this is the severest and most painful chastisement for them. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe
and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.